process and did not open a window for the review of those issues.
The demonstrators say the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, did not follow some provisions of the electoral laws in conducting the election and in announcing the results.
800.
The demonstrators marched to the headquarters of the INEC in Abuja, where they demanded unsuccessfully to see the chairman of Nigeria's electoral body. The opposition PDP and the Labour Party have separately approached the Court of Appeal, challenging the outcome of the February 25 presidential election. The Court of Appeal, which serves as a presidential election petition court, has granted the request of the two political parties for access to inspect sensitive election materials. The demonstrators here said the protest is necessary in view of the gubernatorial and state houses of assembly elections coming up on 11th of March.
What we are here to do first is that the issue of their infractions in the last elections will be dealt with by the court. But going forward, how are we going to resolve this for the elections we have on the 11th of March? That is the most important question on the minds of Nigerians today.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's president-elect Bola Ahmed Tinubu has appealed to the opposition to come and join him to work for the unity and progress of Nigeria. Nigeria's president-elect is expected to be sworn in May 29, 2023, once the courts have established him as the winner of the elections. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
It's another ordinary day for Shivina Khan and her family living in the eastern part of New Delhi. The family starts their day by reading their father's letters, which he wrote in jail, pleading his innocence regarding the riots that broke out in Delhi back in February 2020. The violence claimed dozens of lives, shattered many families and destroyed their property, claimed 53 lives, mostly of Muslims.
My husband was going to work, but on the way, riots sparked and he called me saying the situation is bad, please be safe. In another 30 minutes, he said the riots had started even near his office. He was questioned for several days before being arrested for crime he never committed. I have three children and it's really hard for us to cope up with situations.
Another activist and mother of jailed student Umar Khalid says Muslims are now treated like terrorists in their own country. She said all the charges against his son are politically motivated and a deliberate attempt to demonize Muslims. She says the so-called Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, which is a draconian legislation amended in 2019 by the ruling BJP, allows authorities to declare an individual a terrorist and keep them in detention without trial for months or even years.
It's been 2.5 years since my son is in jail. He was arrested on September 2020 and the charges framed against him are completely false and baseless. He was arrested in connection with the Delhi riots in 2022 and the two FIRs have been registered. One of the charges is UAPA and it's not easy to get bail if such a charge is framed. Media these days is supporting false propaganda, but we have complete faith in our judiciary and we will fight for his release from the Supreme Court.
Umar and Salim are not just only victims languishing in jails without trials. Activists and critics accuse the authorities of accusing Muslim community members of a crime they did not commit. Based on reports by Human Rights Watch, police investigation in the cases were marked by bias, delays, inaccuracy, lack of proper evidence, and a failure to follow proper procedures. Reports suggest that the Indian government has in recent years adopted various laws and ways that are discriminatory towards the country's minorities. The ruling party is also accused of infiltrating country's courts and police, empowering Hindu nationalists to harass, threaten and attack religious minorities with impunity, and cracking down on any dissent. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Iranians have observed the National Tree Planting Day as part of the Natural Resources Week by planting saplings across the country. The country has now launched a wider campaign to plant 1 billion trees in 4 years. Accordingly, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, marked the National Tree Planting Day by planting 3 saplings. Meanwhile, President Ibrahim Raisi went to the National Botanical Garden of Iwan in Tehran to mark the event and start a campaign to plant 1 billion trees nationwide. The Natural Resources Week represents more than just planting trees. It's a strong message of protecting the environment and changing attitudes and lifestyles. Each tree means a gift from the current generation to posterity to have a green and healthy planet. National Tree Planting Day is annually celebrated on the 15th day of Isfand, the last month on the Iranian calendar. The day also marks the beginning of the National Week of Natural Resources.
Have always paid special attention to nature. They believe planting saplings will make the world a better place to live for us, our children, and the generations to come. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iwan, Afghanistan Permanent Trade Center has been opened in the capital, Kabul. The center is in line with the two countries' policies of expanding bilateral ties and connecting business people of the two neighboring states. During the opening ceremony, Afghanistan's Minister of Industry and Commerce highlighted the country's expectations about trade between the two countries.
We expect to balance the trade with Iran. We want to export our goods to Iran, which enjoys a good market. Iran's export to Afghanistan is more than $2 billion a year, but I won't mention our export to Iran because it's a very small amount. We hope that Tehran modifies its laws so that we can increase our exports.
With the opening of this center in Kabul and its capabilities, it is believed that the Taliban government in Afghanistan is providing a platform for more economic connections between Tehran and Kabul.
This center is an example of good relations between Afghanistan and Iran. Both countries have a lot of potentials, and with the opening of this center, we hope that bilateral trade gets a big boost and Tehran and Kabul can be great partners.
This center has great capabilities which can have great effects on rebuilding Afghanistan and the war-torn country's infrastructure.
The priorities for this center are trade of industries, equipment and machineries, also food industry, mining industry and technology. We are also ready to set up an iron production line in Afghanistan. On the other side, mines and precious stones here are useful for Iran.
Iranian and Afghan officials hope that the center helps advance the export goals of the two countries. They highlighted that the development of sustainable trade and exports is the most important task of this center in Kabul.
Many believe the opening of such trade centers would have positive effects on Afghanistan's economy that has taken a lot of damage due to years of political and financial instability. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
Even though inflation remains at a 40-year high, United States President Joe Biden has terminated a program which provided extra food money for over 40 million of the poorest Americans. The elderly, the disabled, students, poor children, and the working poor are now forced to find an average of nearly $100 more every month to spend on food. With sanctions on Russia still massively backfiring across the West, grocery prices here have soared more than 11% over the last year.
The families aren't purchasing food at the same price that they were pre-pandemic. So apart from having families come in more often, we may start seeing families that have to cut back on their housing budget. So what they typically spent on rent, utilities, they may have to start dipping into that to pay for groceries.
Experts on food insecurity contend that food aid to the poor has been insufficient, and that was long before the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program started seeing cuts. The expansion of so-called food stamps was both popular and successful, leading to an immediate 10% reduction in the overall poverty rate and a 14% drop in child poverty.
Versus 2021, when a lot of the pandemic relief was in force, our numbers were actually down significantly. So we've seen our numbers grow from 2021 to 2022, about 40%, give or take. We can only imagine what this next round will bring.
Without government involvement, citizens can only turn to charities for help. In states which have prematurely stopped the expanded food aid, food banks are already reporting a 40% increase in the number of visitors. Last year, the ruling Democrats voted to end the pandemic's expansion of Medicaid, the federal program which provides a bare minimum of health care for the nation's poor. At least 15 million people will also lose their health care coverage. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
By some accounts, the history of animals reaches back to the turn of the 20th century. It finds its roots in antiquity. A 5,200 year found in Iran's burnt city in the 1970s features a series of identified as being sequential, giving it a spin to snatch leaves from a tree. Fast forward have made significant progress. While the first modern cinematic animations years ago, thanks to the efforts by Iran's talented, have attracted the attention of high-quality animations has grown compared to previous years in Iran. Animated blockbuster Lupetu, named Lupetu, is inspired by one used to refer to handmade toys that for their children in the past. Is about a sanitarium where a duck, by teaching them, vandalizes the creative toy workshop, which is particularly popular among Iran and causes it tries to help his father to solve the situation took over 3 years. It was ready to be screened in 2020, however, they delayed the screening, and finally, it screens from early office hit is one of the most popular Iranian cinemas, right? Most popular movie in Iranian cinemas only within a month and a half of its release in the fall season. Lupetu has also taken part in various national and international festivals. Despite their success, the director of Lupetu says there is no room for complacency, adding, Iranian animation studios should redouble their efforts to keep up with the big names in the industry.
Iran's animation industry is progressing. It's perfect that children can watch this animation in the cinemas. But we have a long way to go. We should produce more high-quality cinematic animations to keep up with foreign animations.
Lupetu's producers say it will soon be screened in other countries, with Turkey and Russia showing interest to screen the animation in their cinemas.
Several high-quality cinematic animations have been made in Iran in recent years, and Lupetu is one of them. The blockbuster animation's success testifies that Iran has made significant progress that puts it on a par with big names in the industry.
In order to avoid paying billions of dollars in fines, it appears that the Pakistani government is attempting to find a solution for the completion of an Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project. This comes after Pakistani lawmakers demanded progress on the publicly funded project. Pakistan could face a penalty if the pipeline project with Iran is not completed. The Petroleum Ministry officials warn that Pakistan will have to pay $18 billion if it terminates Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline agreement. It has spoken to the United States to request a waiver as there is a ban on importing gas from Iran. The Parliament Ministry of Foreign Affairs to summon the American envoy and demand Islamabad permission to move forward to cover the fine, pushing Islamabad to give up the planned gas from neighboring Iran. However, the government has so far publicly resisted, claiming that the project is vital to fulfill the country's energy needs.
We should revive the Iran-Pakistan pipeline. That is the key, and we also demand lifting of sanctions which have been imposed by certain countries against Iran, because the sanctions are wrong, they are unjust, and they are immoral. And Iran, like Pakistan, is a strengthened regional relations.
Like Pakistan is no exception to the global energy crisis, which is worsening each passing day. Experts believe gas pipeline project with Iran could be an immediate remedy to needs in Pakistan if the country manages.
Because of the U.S. Important foreign relations, Pakistan has advised by the United States not to increase its trade with Iran and not to negotiate any agreements with Iran. Unfortunately, Pakistan has yielded to that pressure. Pakistan is importing gas from Qatar and other countries, Azerbaijan even, and why not import gas from Iran, which is cheaper than from so many other countries?
In 2009, The gas companies of both Pakistan and Iran signed an agreement under which Islamabad committed to building an 800-kilometer pipeline to the Iranian border by the end of 2014. However, due to the U.S. pressure, Islamabad could not fulfill its commitment. Iran has already finished a portion of the pipeline in its own territory from the gas field to the Pakistan border, where it should connect to the Pakistani part.
The call on the Pakistan efforts to complete Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project comes as Islamabad is already grappling with several crises here at home. Avoiding this $18 billion penalty could save the country from falling into another one. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee, so recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor. Give profits unto this surely merciful of the merciful.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What in there?
We will be talking
again. Leo says this event tonight.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. The Islamic Republic has been pursuing the policy of expanding relations with a look towards the East in particular, while also aiming to grow trade ties with Africa and Latin America. In tonight's program, we'll discuss the extent to which Iran has been successful in this regard with our guests. Academic and political analyst Bruno Beclini joining us from Porto Alegre, Brazil. We also have journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich joining us from Belgrade.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Start off with Mr. Beclini in Porto Alegre. It's great to have you with us, both of you gentlemen. Mr. Beclini, Iran and Venezuela have launched their first direct shipping line as the two countries work to step up cooperation in different fields. How do you view the significance of such a step?
Well, first of all, it will be a reference for the whole maritime freight and commerce between Latin America and the Islamic Republic. Because it's very difficult, for example, for Brazilian exporters to get maritime freight to Iran. And also, the majority of the major of the bulks and the vessels of the merchant from Iran is more dedicated to the Asian continent. So it's a great notice. Also, it includes a question of security, maritime security, considering that the Atlantic and the South Atlantic, it is the majority of the Navy operating there is Anglo-Saxon, being U.S. or Great Britain Navy. They surrounded the Atlantic Southern Ocean from Latin America to Africa, and this is a great notice, even more because, as far as I know, these bulks will also go through South Africa, increasing the commerce between other BRICS countries, like South Africa.
John Bozich, the shipping line has been launched as Iran and Venezuela pledge to boost bilateral fields. They just signed a 20-year strategy to expand cooperation on energy and agriculture, among other things, and have been looking for alternatives to neutralize that pressure. It looks like the more the U.S. tries to crank up the pressure, the target countries, they manage to come up with more opportunities.
Well, actually, that's the case. During the 1990s, when the United States put sanctions here on Serbia, Serbia developed entire new industries and autonomous production inside the country, eliminating the need for many Western imports. The same thing, of course, has happened with Cuba, and we now hear that Russia is a net agricultural exporter after many decades of having to import agricultural products. So what we're seeing is not just isolated results that are successful, but a blanket response of productivity, autonomy, and independence economically as a result of American sanctions. There is nothing other to say except that these sanctions have backfired and they have united the world against the United States.
Mr. Buclini, the Iranian embassy in Venezuela says that one ship will be sent to Venezuela every 3 months. What kind of a response are you expecting to see from the U.S. in this regard? If you recall, back in 2020, when Iran sent oil tankers to Venezuela, Washington had threatened to prevent Venezuela from receiving the ships from Iran. Now, much to the dissatisfaction of the U.S., those ships were received by Venezuela. What about now?
Everything is possible when we think about the so-called hawks living in Washington, D.C. Their capabilities are very, very wide one, and their morality allows them to do everything. Anything is possible and it's unpredictable. But as far as I believe in Latin America capacity of self-defense and autonomous diplomacy, I don't think that Biden administration would dare to do this regarding what is happening now in Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Chile, Bolivia. We are much more self-determined than we would be 5 years ago or even 3 years ago. It will be a hardcore situation for them, allowing the sovereign command, the military combatant commando permanent that they put to project power against, to frighten and to do this, I would say, piracy against Iranian vessels. I don't think they will dare like this, but considering U.S. policies, everything is possible.
Mr. Bosnich, let's look at this in the bigger picture. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, had promised a more comprehensive, quote-unquote, look to the east. Iran seems to be moving in that very direction. Now, a 25-year strategic agreement was recently signed between Tehran and China. What would a boost in economic, energy, and trade relations between Tehran and Beijing mean?
Obviously, this is going to lead to a greater level of integration in other areas other than just energy. China has a great number of technologies and productive capacities that will be of interest and of great use to Iran. Iran also has its excellent drone technologies and military defense technologies that it is certainly more than willing to share with countries facing similar pressure from the United States. I'd also like to predict right now that the one boat every 3 months is going to become one boat every month with Venezuela. And after the first 2 months, it's going to become one boat every week, because the natural flow of trade between countries under sanctions can only explode exponentially. Because these countries have the right to trade, they have the right under the World Trade Organization to trade, and the United States cannot legally sanction or block trade between two independent countries on the open seas.
Mr. Bosnich, I'm going to stay with you. You mentioned the issue of integration. Iran, as we also know, was recently granted full membership at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO. How significant is SCO membership of Iran? What are the implications for Iran across the board economically and diplomatically, and what does it mean for Iran to be an SCO member? How can a stronger, what can a stronger SCO do in particular for the region?
Well, let's compare the, let's say, rival economic groupings around the world. We've got the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is basically a resource rape by the United States from Mexico and Canada. Being a Canadian, I know that firsthand. In the EU, we have former colonial powers trying to make a go of it without the resources that they need locally, and they're doing very, very poorly, as we see with the energy crisis and the insanity of blowing up their own fuel lines in cooperation with the United States. So there's no doubt that the SCO is about to become, if not already, the world's single largest and most important economic cooperation organization. And with the increase of economic cooperation, we're going to see cultural, political, and military cooperation to protect their domestic territory and their rights. I'm looking at the SCO as being the major element in the pendulum shift on this planet toward the east.
Mr. Bakhlini, Iran says that it's expanding relations with the look towards the East in particular, while also eyeing growing trade ties with Africa and with Latin America. How important can these expansions be?
It's a huge importance because for us, for example, in Brazil, Iran is a middle power, ranked in the same level as Brazil, a little bit more in high tech, a little bit less in agriculture, for example. And we can expect for another situation. So Iran expanding commerce, trade, and also a kind of soft power on our societies, it will embrace a portion of the elite in Latin America who has Arab descendancy. I insist on this. Only in Brazil, we are 16 million Arab descendants. We have the vice president. We have the Minister of Economy. We have the Minister of Planning. This is not easy to deal with. So Iran working in trade in Africa and Latin America can embrace a part of the ruling class of those countries to look to the East as a solution to get rid of the U.S. dollar as the international currency and the threats of the sanctions coming from Washington, for example.
And the same question that we had for Mr. Bozich, I'm going to bring Mr. Bakhlini, the functionality of an organization like the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO, with Iran as a member.
It's wonderful. And it's a huge challenge because the SCO and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, it can establish a new pattern of international trade. For example, putting in concrete the dream of Lord Keynes of having the Bancor, an international currency without being connected to a central bank like it was first of all in England during the 19th century and then with the U.S. Federal Bank Service, the Fed. So the SC can expand the trade between Asia and from Asia to Africa and to Latin America. The most important thing that we must understand in international trade, international system, is that we cannot allow anymore the U.S. to be the police of the world. We cannot allow anymore them to say which country will be inside the SWIFT system and which country will without the SWIFT system. We must expand the systems, the banking system, to get rid of U.S. dollar as international currency and to get rid of the SWIFT system. That's the must-be situation.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
John Bozich, these advancements now at the time of the toughest sanctions ever on Iran have led to Iran becoming more and more self-sufficient. Has a maximum pressure campaign and sanctions regime not been successful?
Well, I mean, unless Iran has its man in Washington who's organizing these sanctions to help Iran become independent, no. The United States is behaving like a bully. And that's what they are. They pretend to be the global policeman, but actually what they are is the global bully. And we know, all of us, from our primary school days in school, that there is usually a bully. And the bully uses his brute force against several weaker people that he finds in his class until he runs into one who is not going to be pushed around. The Americans have run into Russia. They have run into China, and they have now run into Iran. And they are not going to be able to push around neither Russia, nor China, nor Iran. And this is the way the bully is brought into line, and if necessary, this is the way that the bully is brought down.
Mr. Beklini, Tehran, first of all, the issue bringing countries together, which was mentioned by Mr. Bozic, the Iranian president, Ibrahim Raisi, has stressed that his country's foreign policy, meaning Iran, is based on opposition to unilateralism. Now, what countries like Iran, Russia, China, Venezuela, and a number of other countries, they surely have in common is opposition to unilateralism. So are the U.S. sanctions and Washington's enmity actually binding more countries together?
No, of course not. They're trying to subordinate the European Union, and they have succeeded in it, promoting and escalating the war in Ukraine and getting out of the Minsk agreement. And they are also, for example, the Southern Command, they want to put their hands on the lithium in Chile, Argentina, and especially in Bolivia. And Bolivia does have an agreement with China to benefit the lithium and to start, for example, a nuclear energy system for medicine in Bolivia, like what happened in Iran. They will do whatever they can to sabotage the Brazilian diplomatic effort to do peace talks between Ukraine and Russia. And even the comedian, the Zelensky, wants to be in a peace talk with Brazilian diplomacy between them and Moscow. Washington is desperate to provoke as more conflicts as they can do this. For example, in the Pacific Ocean, the permanent example that they are provoking instability in Latin America, they are allowing the tie in Peru, for example. So I would say that unilateralism only promotes betraying elite ruling class against their own countries and promote even more war and more dissent in the international system.
John Bozic, on another note, Tehran says allegations concerning Iran's nuclear activities and its lack of transparency with the IAEA are a continuation of Washington's destructive policies, i.e. spreading Iranophobia. Is Washington, in your opinion, trying to spin this to justify the lethal and deadly sanctions that affect the people of Iran?
Well, I would go beyond saying that they're spinning this, because when you spin something, it's partially true, and you augment the true part, that minority aspect, and you diminish the majority aspect, which is false. They're not spinning the story against Iran, they're fabricating it. Iran is a signatory to the necessary agreements on nuclear power and nuclear generation. Iran complied with and placed cameras to watch its operations in nuclear clarification, nuclear, I've forgotten the term about the purification of the nuclear materials for power generation. Iran invited inspectors, and yet the United States continually maintained the lie that Iran was non-compliant. And they did all of this as if all of us were blind, because at the very same time, America's only real ally in the Middle East, Israel, is a non-signatory to these control agreements and is already a nuclear power, as the whistleblower Mordecai Vanunu revealed in Israel before they put him away for 18 years in solitary confinement for revealing Israel's illegal nuclear weapons program.
Bruno Beklini, talking about lack of transparency, it's the Israelis who are known as the sole possessor of nuclear weapons in the West Asian region. They enjoy unconditional support from the U.S. They are not signatories. PT has mentioned the IAEA. They're believed to have a clandestine atomic weapons program. How dangerous can this lack of transparency be, which is never mentioned by the U.S. and its allies?
We must remember what happened during the 1973 war against the Zionist entity. The former passed by minister Golda Meir, she threatened to throw an atomic bomb against the Cairo. The biggest threat against humanity nowadays is the reactor that they do have in Dimona, in the Negev Desert. Colin Powell, also former commander-in-chief of the U.S. forces and passed by also, he said, he written that the Israeli does have, they do have at minimum 200 missiles and ogives, and they maybe do have 300 bombs. So the Zionist entity is the biggest threat to the whole humanity, talking about nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. And I would like to think so that, can we imagine Cuba reinstalling nuclear missiles in the island? What Washington would do nowadays, but they are threatening to install nuclear around the Ukrainian frontier, for example, or even inside from Ukraine, they would like to do this. So I would say that Israeli atomic bombs and atomic program is the open secret of the whole world. And the hypocrisy of the Western societies and the Western media, they are denying the facts and also putting the finger against Iran and other middle powers that only want to be sovereign and self-determined countries and society.
Sure. John Bozich, on the Israeli nuclear weapons, the Iranian foreign ministry has said the standards and discriminatory policies of various U.S. have been ignored and overlooked.
Well, first of all, it's hypocrisy, and that's hypocrisy with a capital H, as in hydrogen bomb, not just nuclear weapons. Israeli includes hydrogen bombs. That means the maximum nuclear that exists. And this is not a rumor. It is not an allegation. It is a proven fact, because scientist Mordecai Vanunu, an Israeli nuclear scientist, revealed this and broke this story in Europe on the run, and he was kidnapped by Israeli to Israel, where he was tried and convicted to 18 years to life in prison. And he was not allowed to meet with, speak to anybody for literally two decades. So that is not what you do with somebody who tells a rumor. Israel is a leading international nuclear power. That's the fact of the matter. The situation now is that America cannot continue to lie about this, and it cannot continue to have a double standard toward Iran off from the entire world. And that's what it looks like America is doing. It's backwards territory.
All right. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Academic and political analyst Bruno Beclini joining us from Porto Alegre, Brazil, and journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bozich joining us from Belgrade. Also, special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
From east to west, throughout the land of Iran, listening to IRIBO. In the limelight.
Russia's operation in Ukraine, the United States, the European Union, and Britain, and a number of other countries have increased supplies of weaponry to Ukraine. Moscow has repeatedly condemned the United States and its NATO allies for delivering arms and ammunition to Ukraine, insisting that the inflow of supplies will only prolong the war. Concerning this issue, we take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The New York Times has covered this story and tells us more. The Biden administration is reportedly considering providing Ukraine with the weapons necessary to target the Crimean Peninsula, an area that has proven instrumental for Russia's operations during the ongoing special operation. The Biden administration claims Kiev's position in future negotiations will be improved if the Ukrainian military can threaten Russia's control of Crimea, though such a move may increase the risk of escalating the conflict. The Biden administration officials are reportedly discussing with their Ukrainian counterparts the use of U.S.-supplied weapons, including high-mobility artillery rocket systems, or HIMARS, and Bradley fighting vehicles, to cover targets like the main land bridge that connects Crimea with the rest of Russia. According to the report, the Biden administration has so far been reluctant to provide Ukraine with the long-range missiles that Kiev would need to attack Crimea out of fear that such a move could provoke Russia and widen the conflict. The New York Times report comes amid developments indicated that the Biden administration announced a military aid package on Friday, 20th of January, that includes Stryker vehicles in addition to various artillery and ammunitions. A deployment of Strykers would mark the first time the U.S. Department of Defense, the Pentagon, has provided Ukraine with the weaponry. To date, the United States has cleared various multi-billion dollar aid packages for Ukraine, with the largest having been announced in early January. More recently, several nations have joined the United States and announced their own military packages for Ukraine, much to the chagrin of Russia, which has condemned the move. The Washington Post has also more. The United States has announced a whopping new package of arms and ammunition for Ukraine worth $2.5 billion, defying Moscow's repeated warnings against supplying Kiev with heavy almost a year into the devastating war. The United States has by far been the largest supplier of military aid to Ukraine, despite Moscow's warnings that it would only prolong the protracted conflict. According to the Pentagon, the new military package will send Stryker armored personnel carriers and also provide critical support for the country's air defense amid the raging conflict. News release said this package provides additional NASAMS, Avenger air defense systems, to help medium-range threats and bolster Ukraine's layered air defense. The package does not feature Western battle tanks requested by Ukraine, but includes 59 Bradley fighting vehicles, 90 Stryker armored personnel carriers, 53 mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles, and 350 high-mobility multipurpose wheeled vehicles, as well as large and small munitions. The massive package is the second largest ever announced by Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the package brings U.S. military assistance to Ukraine some $27.4 billion. Since the start of the Russian military campaign in Ukraine last February, the United States and its European allies have supplied hundreds of armored vehicles to Kiev as part of large military packages. Britain announced recently that it would send Challenger 2 tanks to Ukraine. Denmark promised 19 French-made Caesar howitzers. Sweden promised its Archer artillery system, and Germany said recently it would provide Ukraine with the Marder armored vehicles. Finland announced on Friday, 20th of January, a new donation of more than 400 million euros equipment to Ukraine, not including Leopard 2 heavy tanks, which it said it could also send if there is an agreement with allies. The Defense Ministry said in a statement the new donation would triple the total value of Finland's military aid to Ukraine, bringing the total so far to 590 million euros. Germany has been cautious about supplying heavy weaponry to Ukraine, with the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz facing mounting pressure within Europe to authorize exports of German-made Leopard tanks. It follows a warning by Moscow against an extremely dangerous escalation if the West meets Ukraine's latest calls for longer-range missiles. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters on Thursday, 19th of January. Peskov said, "Potentially this is extremely dangerous. It will mean bringing the conflict to a whole new level, which of course will not bode well from the point of view of global and pan-European security." Russia's TASS news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. Russian ambassador to Washington Anatoly Antonov said on Wednesday, 18th of January, the U.S. State Department, with its comments about Crimea, is in fact pushing the Ukrainian authorities to carry out terrorist attacks against Russia. When asked to comment on the statement of U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price about the actual possibility of Ukrainian armed forces to strike on the Crimean Peninsula using American weaponry, the Russian diplomat said, "We can state that the rhetoric of American officials is becoming more belligerent through its out-of-touch assertions that Crimea is Ukraine and that the armed forces of Ukraine can use American weaponry to protect their territory is essentially pushing the Kiev regime to carry out terrorist attacks in Russia." Antonov added, "Hearing such remarks from Washington, the extremists in Kiev will once again feel complete permissiveness. The risks of conflict escalation will only increase." According to the Russian diplomat, American journalists support such an attitude of the Biden administration and justify strikes of the Kiev regime against Crimea. The ambassador noted, "It is said that American MLRS HIMARS, as well as Bradley fighting vehicles, could be used in the future to launch the offensive in the direction of Crimea. Commentators naively believe that Russia will not respond to attacks on its territory. And to be clear to everyone, we will destroy any weapons supplied to the Vladimir Zelensky regime by either the United States or NATO." Antonov underlined the Russian army will destroy any weapons that Western countries send to Ukraine. He stressed that pumping up Ukraine with material from the United States or other NATO countries will only lead to an increase in civilian casualties and create additional difficulties in the former Soviet Republic. Antonov concluded by saying, "Ponder over the thesis of President of Russia Vladimir Putin. It is just impossible to defeat the Russian Federation. Victory will be ours." On 24th of February, President Putin stated in a televised address that in response to a request by the heads of the Donbass republics, he had made the decision to carry out a special operation. The Russian leader stressed that Moscow had no plans of occupying Ukrainian territory.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is